Accession number 6365, reel 3.
Accession number 6365, reel 3.
Colonel Glover, reel 3.
Well, I went back to see the CCMA, and I found him in a barn. He was a Darrow gentleman called Brigadier Button Williamson. Button was in, was what he was, his nickname. He looked extremely old to me, very tired, but he heard what I had to say. Said, "My boy, don't worry. I've just heard we've retaken Calais and Boulogne. And there's nothing to worry about. Go back and tell your regiment that." And he then gave me, he got his chap out, gave me a very large whiskey, and off I went back to RHQ and so to bed. Well, it wasn't much of a night because we started to get orders to withdraw about that time, and I think that was the last time I went to bed for about a week. Went back to Su Yeap, which had just been bombed and was on fire, and the last time I'd seen it, of course, I'd been with my father to Menin Gate, and we went round the Menin Gate and the route we were on, I was on. Again, I was detached from the regiment because we had lost some a ration truck, and another truck had disappeared, and I was sent off to look for them. They'd been to a rendezvous and disappeared. I arrived at the rendezvous, no sign of them. In fact, they'd been captured by the Germans, who'd been at the rendezvous about half an hour before me, and put them all in the bag, or most in the bag. I didn't see any Germans at all. It's talk of a fog of war. It was extreme. People were wandering out of the hoop. No one knew where hell it was at all. And I was quite unperturbed. I knew the Belgians had given way by that time. So I think we heard it on the wireless. Anyway, I was going on back, and I think it was that day, when I was still trying to catch up regiment, we had another stork flying overhead, and I lay in a ditch, and I had my rifle, and I had a fairly large quantity of tracer ammunition I'd got from somewhere, and I had the greatest fun. I was always keen on bird shooting, firing at this thing as it cruised straight overhead with a tracer. And I actually think I did hit it once. It's awfully difficult to tell, but I think I hit it once. Anyway, a lot of other people were firing at him, but I was having a great time lying in the ditch firing this thing. And somebody hit him, and he crashed about a mile away, about 2 minutes later. And I always remember, shortly after that, meeting a company of the guards who looked really smart. They were absolutely their boots polished, tin hats on. They'd had a hell of a battle, apparently, the previous day, and were only about 50% strength, I think. But by God, they were smart and, doing everything the guard should. They made a very lasting impression on me. Everyone was tending to look a bit scruffy. And also that day, I got stuck in some town, the bridge going over the, I think, on a bridge, a big steel bridge. And the road was totally blocked by Frenchmen crossing the route I wanted to go to. It was a French artillery unit, totally horse-drawn, who looked a bit despondent. And as I was waiting just by the side of the bridge, because we came in on a crossroad to it, I suppose about 40 Dorniers flew over in close formation at the height of about 2,000 feet. And I wondered if they were going to pull the plug on us. But they weren't. They were going off to deal with bomb Dunkirk, I think. So one breathed again. It was a very nervous time. Anyway, eventually I got back to the regiment, and I think this, what day am I on? The 25th, I suppose, yes. And I also found that one of my troop commanders, Captain Newton, And we found out that the place we'd been told to go to was in enemy hands already. So we told RHQVIS on the wireless and went on back. It may well have been the Comines Bridge, I'm not sure, because that was blown just after the second in command, the agent, got across it. Anyway, we got back to eventually to a place in the woods east of Ypres, at a place called Stirling Castle, which is a beautiful modern house belonging to a Belgian sugar baron. It had been slightly looted before we got there. We got machine gunned in the wood. We had all the vehicles scattered around the wood. We got a bit machine gunned there. And again, I was tempted to loot in Stirling Castle. There was actually, I didn't know at the time, a very significant map, and a beautiful map of the British forces fighting the Battle of Dunkirk, which was, I think, one of Marlborough's campaigns also, somewhere about that time. And there was a beautiful print of it. And I thought, well, this place is going to be wrecked any moment now. Why don't I take it home with me? And I thought, no, that's a bit of a cat's trick. So I didn't. Again, I regretted it bitterly. It was splendid, and especially as I'm going to go out, but I could have gone ruined probably on the way home, still there. Anyway, we spent a very uncomfortable night there, and then we moved on. And on the 25th of May, 26th of May, we had some guns in action for a short time, and then we were under orders. We got orders late in the day to conserve any ammunition we had left, and eventually we were told to get the hell out of it and go back to Dunkirk. Well, we were quite not surprised by this thing. We thought, here we're a useless lot. We've really only got three or four guns which can fire a whole regiment of men serving us, as being, and clutching up a road. We're being sent home to get some new guns. It never occurred to us that the whole thing was folding up at that moment. And, all right, there was an awful lot of panic, but as I say, the last thing I'd heard was Kelly and Bologna, thing which was clearly untrue by this time, actually. We knew the Belgians had packed up. So we were told to destroy the remaining guns on Monday the 27th, which we did. And, well, we bashed them about as we could. And we were also told to assemble at a place, having done this, at Hogstart. And we were told to leave anything we couldn't carry. And the adjutant set off to get orders from Dunkirk. We also were told then to assemble all the vehicles and destroy them. That was a bit of a shock. We were somewhere from the sea, which they did the best they could. Drove them into ditches and canals and generally made a mess of them. And the regiment marched off on foot for Brayley Dune, which is on these maps. There we are. We were 10 miles away then, and actually we were being protected by a very good action by the armoured people along the Ferns Canal. They held it for something like 2 days. 2nd Corps, 7th Guards Brigade, that's right. They did a jolly good job along there. It was a very hot day, And we'd all had I was in my British warm, which was our thing, because it was a new coat I'd been given by my mother for Christmas. I was very loath to leave that behind. So I was in my battle dress in a British warm, and marching for 10 miles on a hot day wasn't the best of fun. And I always remember quoting, I think it was Xenophon, who were in the given in by Herodotus, when Xenophon sees the sea after walking right across Asia Minor, he shouts out, "Thalassa, Thalassa." And I did the same to a friend of mine. He said, "What the hell are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, I felt safe already. You know, one saw the sea, one was sure the Navy would be there, as you see a few odd boats and things scattering about." And we got there, I suppose, yes, it says 9 p.m. we got there. Now, what happened to us then is we were each given 30 men, each officer, except for CO and Benedict Commanders, but all the subalterns, etc., were given 30 men each and told to get them on whatever we could, as soon as we could, not to wait around, just look after their search chaps, get them on board, anything we could, etc.
This was at Bray, was it, or Dunkirk?
This was at Bray. Now, we hadn't any rations for 2 days, I think it was. And in the dunes behind the hotel at Bray, I suddenly came across two very drunken members of the Royal Army Service Corps who had a large truck with them. And the reason why they were drunk is the truck was full of rum and sugar and butter. They were perfectly pleasant, but they were drunk as newts. So I started what's that butter you have for Christmas pudding? Rum butter factory. We had some containers. I took over the rum from these chaps. We made butter. We had these 4 gallon containers, about half it of butter, 3 or 4 pounds of sugar, and some rum. And it was pretty good stuff. And I fed God knows how many people. We made tons of it till we ran out. And it was the first thing that anyone really had. Water was terribly short. It made you a bit thirsty, but we got a little water from somewhere and dished it out too. And then we went on to the beach, and there was a lot of stuff coming down every now and then. I remember lying the next morning for some time in a scrape of the dunes, putting my tin hat over my balls in case anything should land. And actually, I still got a piece of rather nice HE or something which whizzed past my ear and went into the sand beside me. And I put my hand on the thing and, of course, burnt my fingers because it was extremely hot. I've still got it in my desk at home. I put it in my pocket, came home. And we stayed there, I suppose, the rest of that day, and I think the rest of the next day. We were told to go up to Dunkirk. There were too many people on our part of the beach. We did, but then came back again. And then we went off. We thought we had a chance. We got some hell of a couple of boats coming in. And a friend of mine called Raleigh Hitchcock made a connection with them. So we formed up and waded into the sea. Now, of course, it doesn't sound very much, but we were in the sea, I suppose, 5 or 6 hours. The sea was warm and it was calm, thank God, because I was all right, because being very tall, The sea came to about there.
Chest level.
And I had my revolver on my Sam Brown slung around my neck, trying to keep it dry. I had my good British warm on still, which kind of felt like a soggy bathing dress. But we made everyone throw their arms away, because a lot of chaps were, if they were short, were really getting a bit, and they were all terribly tired, of course. No one had really slept very much. And so we just made them come in as they were. They just had their tin hats, usually an overcoat. And we waited in the sea and waited. And in due course, these boats gradually came in and took us off. And about midnight, I suppose, I found myself on board HMS Killett, commanded by a perfectly splendid chap, Lord Stanley of Alderley.
Lord Stanley of where?
Of Alderley. He really was an absolutely splendid chap. I think there were 350 of us around, oh no, 450 it says here, got on board that boat. And the rest were unlucky, and they moved up the beach, and they had a horrible time, didn't get off for another 2 days, till the 31st. This was about midnight on the 28th,
29th. Was HMS Kellett absolutely packed with troops?
Yeah. Well, she was carrying 450. She was she was called in those days a frigate, I think. She was nothing like a frigate. She was kind of convoy ship. I think she had a 4-inch gun in the front and a Ehrlichan in the back or something. She hadn't got very much armour, but I must look her up. I ought to look up before I came.
Was there any equipment on board, or was it just men?
Just men. Oh yes, just men.
Were they just British, or were they French or Belgians?
I think there were a few French got on. I think I saw them the following morning. And we set off sometime in the evening. We started to move. And there were 10 officers in the wardroom, which was about the size of this. I knew. 12. They weren't all of my regiment, because I know a chap and I who spent the whole night drinking whiskey. The rest were rolling like so many logs. Every time a ship rolled, they'd roll down the hill and they'd roll back again. And I didn't feel anything. And anyway, Lord Stanley came in for a moment and chatted to us. And then we had a terrific bang, and I thought we'd been torpedoed, but it wasn't. It was a thing called destroyer called the Grafton. She was only about half a mile away. She was torpedoed by an E-boat. And then about 20 minutes later, there was another terrific bang, and another ship got in. We were just jolly lucky. We didn't have to be in the right place. But a friend of mine, this is hard to believe, was on the Grafton. He was asleep in the water, much as I was, a similar situation, except he was asleep. And the first thing he knew was waking up in the sea in his pants and vest. He was then found a bit to hold on to and was just being pulled on board another destroyer when that was torpedoed. He was shot into the water again. And eventually somebody else picked him up. I met him 5 days later. And apparently he was the only chap to survive that wardroom in the Grafton. And apparently he was blown arse first through the bulkhead, because he showed me his behind, which is the most astonishing sight I've seen. It was one enormous blue, yellow and red bruise. And he must have gone through like that. And as far as he knows, he never saw any of those chaps again. But he went through the side of a ship, bang, like a bullet, arse first.
Did the Kellets hang about to pick up survivors from these ships?
Yes, some did. We didn't. If you were full, I think you didn't stop for anything. Just, we were zigzagging all night long. We arrived at Ramsgate the following morning at 6 a.m. I think it was.
How were you received there?
Oh, marvellous. The Women's Royal...
Women's Voluntary Service.
Right. Were there. We were hustled into a train. We were given sandwiches, coffee, donuts. And we stopped at Maidstone, where they again fed us with everything they could lay hands on. And I ran across the station and found a W.H. Smith thing. And I said to the chap, I've got no money. Will you lend me enough money to ring my family in Berkshire? He said, certainly. So he dialed. Between us, we dialed the, where my wife was. No, not in Berkshire at that time. And that's right, my father was in Berkshire. To where we were staying. Sorry, in Hampstead, I beg pardon. We moved to Berkshire. In Hampstead, in London. And I spoke to my mother and I said, I'm back. She said, I didn't know you were on your way at all. We thought you were stuck. Oh, no, I said, I'm back. I said, so she said, well done. And I just managed to run across, shout at the chap, I'll send you a money later. And off we went. And it really was the most remarkable thing. We came round on the North London, through London, of course, which I knew of its route there. And we ended up in Oxford. At the barracks of Oxford Buckslake Infantry.
What did the attitude of the British population seem to be towards the returning BF?
Marvellous. Perfectly marvellous. And, you know, it just there was a train as far as I can be out, going out of the station every 10 minutes or something, and where you got on to, whichever train you got on to, you went wherever the train was going. You didn't have any control then. Just took everybody they could. And most of us arrived in Oxford, of my particular lot. And which I'd, you know, one had seen to more, is they, you kind of cut them on and cut them all. And there we were. And I arrived back, I suppose, got to Oxford about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And because I was the only father who had not seen his child, my batch commander, who was also on, arrived there, said, would I like to have some leave? So I had no idea of how far I was from... My wife had been evacuated to Devizes. So I walked briskly out of the barracks of Oxford, clad in an extremely sandy and salty coat, with my gun on my hip, and started to move to Devizes, which was then about 9 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night. Well, I got a fare lift to start with from some chap in a car, but of course petrol rationing is on. All of signposts had just been taken down because of sorts of parachutes landing, etc., etc. And I looked a mess. Frightful thug. I mean, I had a terrible dirty old hat, peaked cap on, and as I say, a German revolver struck by my wife. I'm surprised I was put in the junk straight away. But I made quite good time, one way or another. I did about 10 miles of walking, one stage, when I got stuck. Then I got a very nice girl who gave me a short lift. She couldn't take me longer, so. And eventually I got an absolutely splendid chap who took me the last 10 miles to the Devizes. And wouldn't do any of my, he wouldn't, you know, just, I said, what about your petrol? He said, no, about your petrol. I can get some more, I'm sure. And he took me down there, and my wife was staying with a doctor, and she came out with him to meet me. And I always remember, I got to bed about, I think it was 4 o'clock in the morning, having eaten, 8 eggs and 2 pounds of bacon, straight off the reel. My wife was making it in a pan. I went to bed. And Their house was a place called Sturt, I think. It's just under the Lark Hill Ranges. And the first thing I knew, which was I slept for 18 hours without a break. Just 18 hours. And when I woke up again, of course it was, I'd lost damn near a day and it was getting dark. The only thing I'd hear was gunfire. And I thought, Christ, you know, I'm back again. But it was some people firing all sorts of planes just above our heads. And that was that.
Could I ask you some questions about the campaign in France? Yeah. Did you ever suspect at any stage that there was any fifth column activity?
No. I remember chasing a chap on about the somewhere during this time we were wandering about, seeing a chap come down in a parachute and going after him in a truck. But I think he was an RAF chap. Mind you, only once did I see any RAF people. But that was, you know, they were elsewhere. There were a lot of, when I got to the Vizies, I went to see a friend of mine who's also got back. And there was a hell of a thing, a lot of RAF stationed at the Vizies. And there was a bit of bad feeling in the pubs that night because between the army and the RAF, who said the bladders buggers weren't doing any good, you know. But I think it was just a lot of chaps were tired out and probably frightened to death and one thing or another.
Whereabouts did you see the parachutist?
Oh, somewhere near one of our gun positions.
Did your unit take many casualties?
We got chaps put in the bag, and I said they went off to... I don't think anybody was killed. There were a few wounded on at one of the times. Five were put in the bag. One I know was wounded. It happened close to me by a bullet from the aeroplane. And I think one was killed. I think he was drowned. Came back from the church.
This would be out of how many complement? Approximately.
About 700 odd.
So the casualties were extremely light?
Extremely light.
Was there medical attention for anybody who was wounded?
We had a very nice doctor, but we lost our first doctor just before we set off because he got promotion, went to be sent back to be director of hygiene or something. We had a doctor, we had a very efficient, medical orderly. But I don't think we really had any much use for him.
Were you receiving regular orders, or was it difficult to get orders through?
It was very difficult to get orders which made sense, I think. We were basically army troops, really, and we got shuffled around a bit between one here. And as I said, we were completely useless, or mostly useless. We had enough guns or ammunition. I don't think anyone wants to know too much about us, Get the hell out of here, so to speak. Once we got to a certain stage, when they realised our guns just couldn't be made to fire, or any five of them, eventually.
What about your food supplies? Were they?
They were good. So I think we failed to get. I was here a little short of miraculous till the last 4 days.
And then what did you do?
We did a little living off the countryside. All the farms were being abandoned, you see. The place was full of... We were a country thing, and we had full of butchers and country boys who... We had some marvellous chicken, Well, everyone, you know, he's been rich in animals there, and being a country regiment, milk was no problem. Bacon and eggs were no problem. You know, it was just part of normal life. And every farmer, you know, pays all the villains have deserted and gone, or they were just these wretched animals hoping to be milked. You know.
Did the troops kill pigs?
Oh, yes, we certainly killed some pigs. Jolly good they were, too. And I see we had a